That's right. Welcome into Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Excited for tonight's show. Chase McCabe, Hal Gill, better known as Skillsy, and the general manager of the Nashville Predators, David Poile, is our guest for the first half of the show tonight. Scott Nickel going to join at the bottom of the hour for the season finale of Smashville Live. Gentlemen, how are we? Good to see you. David,
I'm good. I think we're all doing good.
Yeah, I know.
I know, David, you probably want to put – we're not going to talk about last night. It's over. It's gone. So we're not even going to bring that up.
Well, it's all part of this remarkable season. This is one of a kind. If I was writing a book, that would have been another chapter in the book. It's just this has been a year like no other. In some ways, it seems like at least 2 years, the way the season has gone from what I would like to call the first half, which wasn't so great, to the second half, which has been very good and very promising, and to the sort of the climax, which is now Saturday, which is the biggest game of the season against Dallas, which is not for all the marbles, but virtually it's as big as they come for any regular season game in any season, including this very remarkable season.
Yeah, and how excited are you to know that, you know, even though we're not there to 100%, that's going to be more in the middle of May, but more fans have been allowed in Bridgestone Arena, and you can definitely tell the difference. I know the players have commented on it. So with a game of that magnitude Saturday night, knowing that you're going to have a lot of the Smashville faithful in Bridgestone, that has to feel pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's this has been, as I say, such a different year, tough year, and playing in some of these buildings that don't allow any fans, like Chicago, which, you know, arguably is one of the best two or three buildings in the whole league in terms of atmosphere, and have no fans in there. It just doesn't seem to be right. And the other night when we did beat Florida on Monday night, the fans that were there were loud and very supportive. And the last minute of the play, they stood up and waved the gold towels, and it just felt like, man, this is just about back. We're just about back. And again, which all obviously to me, again, is to keep pecking away here. And if we can make the playoffs, get that seventh man, that crowd on our side, we might have a little advantage over one of these teams in the playoffs just by having the home crowd there at Bridgestone Arena. So hope springs eternal for the Predators.
David, you talked about it, how crazy it's been. And, right when I saw you, you said, hey, it's nice to see you. It's hard right now where you're not seeing guys around the rink. You're not constantly, you know, we're always in passing, whether it's on the road or at Bridgestone. We're going by and you kind of get a feel for how everything's going. How has it been for you to get a pulse on this team? Because on the ice, it looks like a different team, different mindset. They have an attack mentality that they haven't had in a while. And I wonder if you're seeing that, and if you're getting that feel being around, or how much can you be around, and is it hard without getting that feeling?
Yeah. All the above, definitely harder, certainly way less interaction than I've ever had before with the team. One of the big missing parts is just, I say, good to see you, Hal. I mean, we just no interaction. I mean, we do a lot of things, with our organization, you know, community-wise, family-wise, we have some social things that we get together from, you know, whether it be community activity or just a Christmas party where all the families are there with their kids. We've had, I believe, 8 babies born on our team this year. And, you know, and there are wives, because there's new wives on the team that we haven't even met. I mean, it's a sad situation, because this is, I mean, again, one of the big things when it's all said and done, I'm sure I will say what I've heard many other people say in this business. I mean, what do you remember the most? And as you would say, it's your teammates and going to the skate or the socialization. And it's the same with me, whether it's my brethren as the general managers. We usually have 2 or 3 meetings a year. We've done those all virtually. And then again, just to getting to know people. And because I'm a little bit older now, I can always identify with that, because there's a lot of players I've had have retired, and I'll run into them from time to time, and they'll mention something that my wife or I did for them, like, you know, 25 or 30 years ago when they were young and up and coming. And those are the things that are really, really important. And this year has been hard. And, you know, I can just imagine with the young families, you know, wives from other cities and not having the support or the help. I mean, this could obviously be one of the greatest years ever with eight babies on your team. I mean, imagine the socialization that you could have. So all that's hard. And from a manager standpoint, because of the COVID and all of the protocols, we're certainly have kept our distance in terms of our amount of time that we spend, you know, speaking with each other in terms of player meetings and any of that interaction. I mean, we're around all the time, but it certainly is different. And I like everybody else, can't wait till it gets more normalized, which we see that in Bridgestone Arena with the fans being let in. We see that from our mayor announcing yesterday that Nashville is going to be pretty well open on all fronts, except for wearing a mask. And I can't wait till we have the opportunity to fill up our building again and to socialize with each other, because that's the biggest missing thing for me, for sure.
Are you able to have any interaction with, like, when you're on the road or, you know, another team and you're playing the same teams this year, but with another general manager? Does everything have to be via phone or Zoom? Like, leading up to the trade deadline, were you able to have face-to-face conversations with any of those guys?
Not really. I mean, we actually sit, because we're quarantined off in a certain section of every building, we actually sit close to each other. So there's usually a wave, you know, to each other. And, you know, on occasion, if I'm not violating anything, I've, you know, been able to talk to a guy for a couple of minutes, but it's awkward, and neither party wants to do it for very long. And, sure. And you don't want to be the guy. you know, again, there's been some situations, and our team, knock on wood, has done a really good job. We had a lot of COVID right at before training camp, and our training camp wasn't that good, which has partly had something to do with starting the season. But I think, you know, we've tried really hard not to violate anything, and going to, you know, restaurants, different things like that. And so it's just really, really different. It just goes back to the last question about the socialization. It's you know, way different when you can, you know, get in front of somebody and talk to them, and, you know, look in their eye and see what they mean or what have you, whether that's be something I'm trying to find out some information from a GM, or if I'm talking to a player. So even we can disguise ourselves a little bit on these Zoom calls, I guess. So, again, it's the same for everybody, but we're used to a certain way. Yeah, I guess that maybe that's the best way to put it. And I'd like to get it back, whether it be my job or my personal life. We'd selfishly all get it back. We got a good life, believe me. I'm not complaining for a second, but I know that it could be even better for ourselves, our team, our players, our fans, and all of Nashville. So that's, I'm trying to make a point, which I don't think I am, but that's kind of where I'm at.
Well, as if the COVID and everything isn't stressful enough, you had a team that just wasn't winning. You know, it was a tough start. And then you throw in injuries to almost every key player in the lineup, and somehow you go from a seller and you switch around. I mean, talk about stressful as it is. Now it's all in your hands, and you're looking at a team that's winning and playing great hockey. All these young guys stepping up. How has that been to see? You know, obviously injuries are tough, and you hope you get those guys back and everything, but you're watching all these young guys start to come around, like Tolvanen and Yakov Trenin is playing well. You know, you go up and down the list. Carrier was playing great hockey, and then he's injured. And it's got to be stressful for you to watch that and go from a seller to, you know, how do you play this team, and what do you think about this team? That must have been tough for you.
Well, like I say, it's almost like two different seasons. You know, the first half of the season, where it's not exactly by games, we're five or six games under 500, and now the last 25 games, now we're 10 games over 500, 16-6-1, something like that, 23 games. I mean, like I said, the COVID hit our team early at training camp. Our training camp was supposed to be 10 days long. It was only 6 days long. We had players like Eric Hall that we signed just before training camp, and he misses all of training camp, and his wife has a baby. He eventually comes down to Nashville. He doesn't know where he fits in on the team, what position he fits in on the team. He scratched a couple of times. You know, it's things like that. I mean, I could sort of give the same description of 10 other players, you know, a little bit variation in the story, but the same end result. So we were, we didn't know whether we were coming or going, and nothing seemed to fit. And a lot of things were out of whack. And, it just was a slow process. I certainly give, both the players and especially the coaches, really high marks for weathering through the storm, if you will, working with everybody, getting back on the same page as to how we wanted to play, get an identity, which, you know, you referred to, like that Trennan and that herd line, the fourth line that played a more physical brand of play, because of injuries, giving some kids a chance, like Tolvanen. Our power play was the worst in the league. And when Tolvanen came back with he and Philip Forsberg down both sides of the flank there, gave us a look like we've never had before. And that really got our team going in the right direction. You mentioned Carrier's name. He comes in for a guy that we've had in our organization, but really have not given him much of a chance. He comes in and is playing top minutes, and we're winning with him in the lineup. So those were huge changes. Yeah, even with Juicy Saros, who's playing fantastic hockey, you know, right now, his start of the season was kind of typical with our team. I mean, he was not winning games, and his save percentage, instead of being, like, I believe now the second highest in the league, he was close to being the second lowest in the league. So it was on and on. So that book that I'm not writing, you know, there's chapter after chapter of, you know, what was wrong, and then however we righted the ship to where we are now. And I hope that, you know, again, with five games to go, and as we talked about the big game on Saturday against Dallas, I really hope that we can get the job done and get in the playoffs, because I think we've actually really grown as an organization through, which is always the case. I mean, you know, you can't have everything go perfectly, and, you know, day after day, that's not life. And with us too, I think you learn a lot more through some struggles and a little bit of adversity. And you know, now even from my viewpoint, like, as a manager, if you look to the future, like, you know, Juice has established himself as a clear number one goalie. You've got young players like on defense, like Fabro and now Carrier, and maybe Davies, maybe Ferentz to go along with our more veteran guys like Yossi Ellis and Ekholm. On the forward line, you got, you know, two or three brand new guys with Tolvanen playing hot, very high in the lineup in the power play. You got Luke Cunningham that's come back after an injury and now looks like a good player, and he looks like he's scoring like almost every game now. And, yeah. And then you got the younger guys like Janot and Olivier. So, you know, I think we found out a lot about our team, and I certainly like where we sit today and where we're going, you know, next year versus where we were after, say, 20 games of the season.
He is the general manager of the Nashville Predators, David Poile, alongside Hal Gill. I'm Chase McCabe. We're going to take a quick timeout, but we'll come back more with the GM as they get ready for that big game on Saturday. It is Smashville Live, all brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming on the Game Nashville app. You can also watch on Twitch, Twitter, Periscope, Facebook, YouTube as well. It's all brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Chase McCabe, Hal Gill, and the general manager, David Poile, here with us tonight. And David, you mentioned just the season as a whole and what the job that your coaches have done, and I want to go back the 2 years, essentially the two seasons that you guys have been faced with COVID, but you made a decision you haven't made a lot in your career as a manager. You made a coaching change last year, you brought in John Hines, and then a couple months later he's faced with COVID, the stoppage and return to play, and just things weren't normal for him. Now in the last couple months, do you feel like that you've finally gotten to see just exactly what he can do and the guy that you hired, because it seems to be working. The system seems to be working with this team.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been as I've been saying to all of this interview, hard on everybody, but nobody's had a tougher time than John Hines, just because it's, as you said, we start for a month or so, and, you know, the we ended up in Toronto on March 12th of a year ago, and we'd won three in a row and we're making our push to get in the playoffs, and bang, COVID goes. And then we come back and have a training camp, and you think you're going the right direction, but in my mind, we got upset by Arizona, which was not a good thing. We come back, we're all psyched up to have the training camp, and about a good portion of our team gets COVID either just before or in training camp, and that's doesn't go very good. Thus, our start of a season doesn't go very good. So it's been a sort of a catch up and all along. But as you said, and recently, I just think John is starting to put his stamp, his systems, his way of play, and I think the players have bought in all throughout the lineup. We certainly are a better team. We're certainly a harder team to play against right now. And when you look at it, he's only been here like a season. A normal season is 82 games, and I think we've played about, I could be wrong here, like 65 games or something like that. We haven't even played a full season, even though John's been here for over a year. But we made some other changes, hiring Todd Richards as an assistant coach, and Todd was with the Tampa Bay Lightning, who won the Stanley Cup last year. And I think he's been a really good addition to our team. Danny Hinote, former player, has got a lot of energy, a lot of pizzazz, and brings a different element to our coaching staff. Dan Lambert is in his second year, and he's in charge of our power play, and that's been much better recently. So a lot of good things have happened for the coaches in terms of getting them going in the right direction. So I'm really happy with John and the progress he's made, and he's a really good young up-and-coming coach.
Yeah, John Heinze has talked to, when I've had a chance to talk to him, he's said that they were trying to find their rhythm too. They're not together all the time, and it's been a challenge to find their rhythm. Like, who's going to talk now in the meeting, and who's got this meeting? And so they've been figuring out that process as well, right? And the same with you, communicating with them.
Yeah. And like I say, it's not only the COVID, it's making significant changes in our lineup. And we've brought in five or six guys in the offseason, and now we've brought in a lot more rookies. So we've moved everybody's cheese, a new way of playing, a little bit new of a system. The hanging on that I like to refer to it a little bit of the Stanley Cup Finals in 17. I mean, that's past now. We're developing a new team, a new way to play, and a new and different identity under a new coaching staff. So it's taken a little bit of time, and there's COVID, having new players, having eight babies born 1 year on your team. That's a lot of stuff that we've been throwing this year to handle. We've used the most players we've ever used in a season with the Predators. Most injuries I believe they've ever had in a year. Most rookies used in the NHL this year. It's on and on. It's a lot of different things. But all in all, it's all headed in the right direction, and that's the most important thing.
Something that I've never asked you as we kind of walk down memory lane, and I don't think I've ever even heard you answer this, but in 1997, when you were hired as the general manager, of course, you had a successful career in Washington as their general manager. Why did you want to tackle an expansion team? And especially in those days, the expansion rules today for Vegas and then soon for Seattle, quite different than what you faced. So why was that something that you wanted to tackle way back then?
I think it's in my DNA. My dad was a general manager of two expansion teams, the Philadelphia Flyers and the Vancouver Canucks. And so, what they say, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, I guess. I thought it was a neat situation. I actually had another basically job offer at the time. And my dad, who was still alive at the time, was kind of very upset that I didn't take that job versus this job. But I felt really, really good about it. I really wanted to do it. I mean, you come into a non-traditional market, all those kind of cliches that were being used at the time. And I thought it was cool right from day one. I mean, hiring everybody, I had a hand in hiring everybody or working on the locker room downstairs. We brought in Pete Rogers from Rochester to do that. I brought my trainer in from Washington to help out. And all these different things, for you hiring your staff, your scouts, and there's so many stories that go along with that. And one of which is, like, somebody said to me that when I called around asking for advice as to some guys that had run expansion teams or had a little bit more experience than me, I just said, well, what do you think? And they said, well, the first thing that you should do is hire the most experienced coach that you possibly can get, because your team's not going to be very good. And a good coach can cover up for a lot of the mistakes of your players. So I did just the opposite in just about everything. I hired scouts that never scouted before. And of course, I hired a coach that had never coached in the National Hockey League before, in Barry Trotz, and that was one of the best decisions I ever made.
David, I obviously you're in charge of everything, so there's a million things we could ask you, but I want to ask you about you. What have you been? I know from being on the road, you're a gym rat. You're always in the gym working out. I see you. You can't sneak in there. I see you. But what are you doing these days to keep yourself, what's your distraction?
I bought a Peloton.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Nice.
That was pretty good. I put on a lot of miles this year. A lot of miles. Yeah. I mean, it's healthy, as you know, to stay motivated. Everybody said, well, geez, you got all the athletes and you got all this equipment downstairs. You work out with the players. I said, I've never worked out with the players. I think it's good to do stuff. I wish I was doing a little bit more, but all in all, happy with that. Peloton was a good investment. I think it's got a lot of stuff on there. So I've ridden a lot of miles. I'm just about ready for the Tour de France.
It's a good balance, because I know you like a good bottle of wine too, right? So you get your workout in, then you can enjoy yourself.
That's right. Well, you got to get up in the morning early and get that in. And if you do a good job, if you do that, then you're allowed to have a glass of wine. So that's
perfect.
That's good. Always a lot of good stories if you can have a glass of wine with people that you like to be with. And right now, night after night, I'm with my favorite person, my wife. So we're saving up our stories for when we get back to normal again.
David, you've made a lot of trades over the years as a general manager, but I got to ask you about one in particular. On February 17th, 2012, when you shipped off Blake Jeffrion and a prospect and a 2012 second round pick for this big guy, what did you see in Hal that made you think, I need that guy?
I think he had the wine. He had the wine when he did that. That's the problem.
I've always been attracted to the size, always the size. Well, again, it was another shot, another attempt to win playoff games to somebody that had been there, done that before. And, you're trying to give your team a chance to win, every year. And, Hal had that experience. The thing I liked most about Hal was it caught my attention all the time. Was Jaromir Jagr always saying the hardest player that he ever played against was Hal Gill? So, I mean, if Jaromir Jagr said that, that had to be good enough for me.
Absolutely.
I had to pay handsomely for that one, for that quote. That was
before we let you go, Dallas on Saturday, we've talked about it, how important this is. Gotta ask though, how close is Philip? How close are some of the other guys? Is there a chance, especially with Philip, that we could see him Saturday?
They're getting close. We got two or three guys that are getting close, but again, every time I'm asked the question, if I say anything, it seems to never become right. I mean, we're getting close. I don't know whether we're going to see anybody on Saturday, but we didn't practice today. We got the Phillips skating every day, Fabro, Carrier, to give you a couple of names. They're skating. They're getting closer, and I'm hopeful if it's not Saturday that hopefully these guys will get back for the last four games against Columbus and Carolina. So keep your fingers crossed.
There you go. You know, if I didn't ask, people are going to go, why didn't you ask him? Why didn't you ask him? So got to do it. David, thanks so much for taking the time tonight. We're going to talk to Scott Nickel, a former player, and now, of course, in the front office with you guys. And so looking forward to that. But best of luck the rest of the way. And Saturday night's going to be a lot of fun.
It should be great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
David Poyle. Predators general manager. Again, we will come back with Scott Nickel. That's on the other side. New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is Smashville Live.
That's right. It is Smashville Live, all presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine of Bellevue, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Chase McCabe, Hal Gill. Appreciate Predators General Manager David Poile for joining us in the first half of the show. And now we say hello to Scott Nickel, of course, longtime member of the Nashville Predators as a player, now in the front office as the director of player development and also the general manager of the Milwaukee Admirals. Scott, how you doing? Good to see you.
Great. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's good to see you, as we've been saying a lot, because that isn't happening a lot these days in person. But I want to start with, you know, you're one of your titles is obviously the GM of the Milwaukee Admirals. With them not having a season, your prospects have been playing with the Chicago Wolves. What has that dynamic been like of basically being able to, or having to share resources with another organization?
Well, the amount of injuries we've had this year, it's been fantastic. So, you know, we've had probably eight of our Milwaukee guys in the lineup, so I don't have to go scour the earth to trying to fill their spots. But it has actually been really good. Carolina's been fantastic. The host of the Chicago Wolves have been great. We've been actually playing out of their practice facility, which is they have lots of space. The dress room's beautiful. They have offices upstairs, so when I go in there, I kind of have my own office, overlooks the rink. So it has been fantastic that way, because all my staff can work as well. Like our head coach, Carl Taylor, is running the power play there. Our two assistant coaches are kind of like player development, American League player development skills coaches. So they're in there every day. Our video coaches work in there. Both our trainers and our medical guys there. So it gives them, you know, gets them working and not being out of hockey for a year and a half. So it's just, we have a lot of staff between our staff, Chicago staff. They have their head medical guy, they have their equipment guy, and they also have an assistant coach. And then you have Carolina's group, which is Sergei Samsonov, player development, Mazzotti, goalie coach, Gleason is defensive coach. Then they got the head coach, Ryan Orzovsky. They got Patty Dwyer, runs the D. And then Bobby Nardella, who's Chicago, is on the bench as well. So there's a lot of voices. You know how the coaching staff goes. So I think I manage the coaches more than I manage the players, but everything's been great.
Skillsy.
Yeah, well, you talked about like the guys that have been called up, and you have the taxi squad. Has it been hard to balance like what kid you're trying to develop a career for each individual player? You also have to do what's right for each team. How do you play the balancing act where you say, okay, you're going to go to the taxi? I mean, it's been great that they've been getting in with the injuries, but it's been tough. But that taxi squad is a new kind of thing that you have to navigate.
The taxi squad pretty much like hurt the American League for sure. Cause you have your six guys that would be four of your guys would be in Milwaukee. So it really did hurt the American League, but it also gave an opportunity for Tomasino, Luca Evangelista, kids from call or junior from the OHL, have an ability to play in the American League. So it has been and then you put in the COVID protocols, Skillsy, where if we're going to call somebody up, we have to be 4 or 5 days ahead of calling them up, because that takes them that long to get back into the NHL bubble. So we picked Chicago so they could drive, but we don't test like the NHL tests in the for the protocol. We do still do the PCR testing, but you're still considered high risk because you're not in the NHL kind of protocol. You play against bubble. Other teams, you play against Rockford. Yeah. So you're like, okay, all right, we got three games coming up. What if we get an injury? Let's bring up Tomasino. That's going to take 4 or 5 days for him to integrate into our bubble. So I guess we'll call him up, and then he drives and he sits in the hotel, and then finally he gets to come out and play. And then, so it is a little bit of a goat rodeo that way. But, and then it's also tough for the kids who are on the taxi squad, like Michael McCarron. He's a great player and he's played games this year, but he hasn't played a whole lot of games. And then, you know, and so you're kind of, so I talk to those kids in between the periods all the time because they have a suite next to us. And it's a weird dynamic because they're like, I'm a healthy scratch, but I'm not a healthy scratch because I'm not part of the Preds. I'm a taxi squad guy. I skate with six other guys. I don't skate with the team. Like you really do feel for these kids kind of caught in the kind of in between, but they've had great attitudes. I think our coaching staff has done a fantastic job of trying to integrate them and bring them into the practices. We're just not practicing a whole lot because they play so many games.
You bring up Philip Tomasino, who's one of the highly touted prospects for this organization. What have you seen from him in Chicago and then now with the taxi squad? I know he's still very young, got a long way to go, but what are some of the early returns with him?
He's just a hockey player. I think that's the best way to describe him, is he just makes plays on the inside. He's a young player. He's tied with Tanner Jeannot for points. He should be playing in the OHL this year. So he just goes about his business. Nothing really rattles him. What I love about him is he doesn't need 4, 5, 6 different chances to score. And sometimes, like in junior hockey, you're going to get 6 scoring chances a game. American League, maybe you get 2 or 3. The NHL, you might get 1 every 3 games. Where this kid, he scores. He produces. Like, if you look at him at Team Canada, they had 3 inter-squad games, and he produced. He was playing with Kirby Dock, I think, and he produced. And then they went into a quarantine for 2 weeks. They came out, they had like 2 practices, and they picked the team. So if he didn't come out of that producing in the first 3 games, he might not even made Team Canada. You know, so that's the quality I like about the kid. And he's so personable. He's got a good youthful energy about him. Like, he just loves coming to the rink, talks a million miles an hour. He's just, I like the kid. He's going to be a good
player. You talked about Tanner Jeannot. I know you guys, you've been talking about him for a while and saying how, like, he's come on the scene and, like, he's a lot of fun to watch, but did you know, has he always been that much of a wrecking ball?
He's like, really grown. Yeah. I love watching that line. Like, I could see, yeah. I'm like, Heinze, put him back with out there.
Trennan,
like,
you can say the same about Trennan, right? You know, like, he's,
yeah.
And Olivier.
No, but that was our group. That was our team last year in Milwaukee. That's how we played. Like, a little bit of old school throwback. You know, where you're heavy, you're hard, you finish every check, you reload through the middle, you have a good stick. And the thing is, these guys can skate and they can track, and that's a skill. And then they have enough skill to be able to make plays off the wall, and they've been doing great. They've been bearing their chances. Like, you root for kids like that. Like, Matty Olivier, we signed him on an American League contract, and he worked his way up. We gave him an NHL contract, still stayed in the American League, got his chance last year. Maybe fumbled his opportunity a little bit, got sent back down, and then he wasn't gonna let it pass by again this year. And Tanner was kind of the same way. Like, I always find your second year pro is the hardest. And he came in first year, broke his collarbone, was just starting to get some traction. Second year, we had some college free agents come in. We had some new rookies come in. He's not the sexy, polished little rookie anymore. So we had to, that was probably my toughest decision as a general manager, was to send him to the East Coast League, because I didn't want him sitting in the stands. And he looked me in the eye and he's like, what do I have to do to get back? I'm like, look at Matty Olivier. What does he do? Tanner went down there, scored. He fought his way out of the East Coast League, came up here, and he was in that line. Matty Olivier and Tanner was our identity line for Milwaukee. And we just took off from there.
Back when you were here with the Predators, that's when things started to turn and people were noticing, you know, learning the team more. But I can remember in those days just trying to learn the players on the NHL roster. Now you're on Twitter, you hear people call in and they're asking about all these prospects. How cool is that for you to see that the fan base has not only embraced what's happening with the big club, but knowing what's going on in the farm system as well?
Yeah, I think that just shows the passion of the fans and the knowledge of the fans. I think with Pete Weber and Terry Crisp, like, they educated the fan base for a lot of years, and we had more success. We finally started getting some free agents with Paul Kariya, and we traded for Forsberg, and, you know, we started, and Jason Arnott came here. So then it just, you know, just grew from there. And I think probably the best quality is, I think we've had great people here. And they've done great things in the community with charities. And I think that's also, the players are very approachable to the fan base and to the fans. And I think that's how it also grew so popular here.
We'll step away. Go ahead, Al.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Jason.
I was going to say, we'll step away real quick with Scott Nickel, who's been nice enough to join us here on the season finale of Smashville Live. It's all presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is Smashville Live.
There we go. We're back here on Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. We're on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Periscope, all those things, Facebook, Chase McCabe, Hal Gill, Scott Nickel, hanging out here on a Wednesday night. And we asked about a lot of prospects, Hal, but there was one in particular we left out, so I'll let you do the honor.
Yeah, Eli Tolvanen. It's been a while, but he's come on the scene now. You've worked a lot with him. I mean, obviously, a power play specialist. He can snipe, but the kid's hitting everything. Like, he's got a little scooter in him. You rubbed off on him. Tell us about his progression.
Minus a shot. Yeah. No, he's been, you know, everything we've asked Tolvi to do, he's done. You know, like, he could have, after he scored 20 goals in the KHL, and he didn't make our team up top, and he came to Milwaukee, like, he could have went back to the KHL. But he wanted to be a hockey player and wanted to learn and on this side of the pond. And basically everything about his game, minus scoring, he had to work on. It was, you know, he has that. He doesn't lose that ability, but it was just him stopping on pucks and you know, 3-4 hard strides, getting pucks back and just being good along the wall and learning how to play 3-3 nights and 3 games in 3 nights. And by the end of last year, before we had the pause, he was killing penalties. He's blocking shots and tracking. And so it's been great to see his evolution and ball and just evolve through, you know, just by playing and just by being around his peers. Like, you forget he was the youngest player on our team last year in Milwaukee. Like, you feel like he's been around for 5 or 6 years. Like, he is a young player. And so we're great to see him. Great to see him kind of grab the opportunity and just go with it.
How awesome is it for you to work with a kid and then to see that come to fruition in the NHL, live their dream? Like, that's got to be the best feeling.
That's my best phone call, is when I call these kids up, like, for their first, tell them they're packed their bags or coming to the National Hockey League. Like, that is the best phone call. I remember my phone call from my coach, and I thought it was a prank, and I make sure it's the best call, because that's all the kids are all trying to get there. And since you've been 5 years old, you want to play in the NHL. So it's great. He's doing great. A lot of our guys, it's fun watching our guys. You spend so much time. You forget that you're in the player development part of it with Florida. Like, you draft these kids, you have 4 years with them sometimes before they even get to Milwaukee, or before they get to Springfield or wherever they're at. Like, and then they're another 3 years. So, like, I have them for sometimes seven years before they even get to the NHL. Like, you almost feel like they're part of your kids, you know? Like, you watch them, you grow up, they'll call you. My best phone calls are not even when they call about hockey. They call about, geez, I have a rookie party. I'm not a big drinker. I don't want to go. I'm going to stay home. I'm like, no, you're going to have this, you know, if you go to college, you're going to have all this peer pressure as well. Just go have fun with it. You'll be surprised how many people don't drink there. And he's like, then they call next day. Yeah, that was great. I had a good time. So those are the best phone calls you get. So it is, it's a long process, development camp, flying into wherever it is, Baie-Comeau to Victoriaville to Kelowna to Vancouver to Portland, but it is all worth it in the end when you see these kids do their solo lap.
Scott, you were in the league for 13 years, had a good career. What is it that led you down this path to want to be able to, you know, in many ways pay it forward and work with these young kids?
I love the game. I love what it's, you know, what it's really molded me to the person I am. Like, I love coming to the rink. I still love coming to the rink. I come to the rink and then go in coach's office and go down in the training room and just, you know, shoot bull crap with the guys in the room. Like, I enjoy that. That's, I feel like comfortable there. And I don't know. I just, you know, I love seeing guys get to their, you know, to make their dreams. That's just, I don't know. It's hard to say. I'm very blessed and fortunate that I get to work in hockey and be in the position I'm in, and very thankful for David and, you know, give me a call after pl- playing till I was 38 and asked me if I was ever going to retire. So it's been great. It's been a really good run.
When you were here in Nashville, you were here right as things were turning, where you had some really good teams making the playoffs. I mean, we remember, you know, 06, 07, you mentioned Korea signing here, the Peter Forsberg trade. And then when the team was sold, you were there kind of in that transition. To see this organization now, to see the city now, what is that like for you to remember what it was like and then to see it today?
The city is unbelievable, how much it's grown and the traffic and all that, but it's just, they're so passionate. They always were. We always sold out. The playoffs were always so loud. We always ran into San Jose or Detroit. It just wasn't a really good matchup for us. But it is a little bit of a roller coaster of emotions, because we had a really good team. Like our team back then, we could play any style as well. Like we could skate, we could be physical with, you know, you had Tutu and Hordachuk, and, you know, we get at it. And then also you had guys who were like, our back end was fantastic, very mobile, but physical, like with good goaltending. It's hockey. It's hard to win and it's hard to keep going. But, and then when the team did get sold, and then we were just a bunch of grinders and muckers, and, you know, we ended up scratching and clawing and making it into the playoffs, I think on the last game, like it's been good. It was a fun ride. I feel like this team is a little bit like that. Like they're, you know, I love the way our makeup of our team is this year. I think we have a really good mix of skill, high end skill, to just nuts and bolts of guys that just want to get in there and get after it. And we got some really good puck moving D and can skate. And then we also have two really big bookends in Harper and Gabranson. So and our goaltender can win us games. So we just got to get in and we just got to keep going. Like, I'm excited. This team I find is very well built for playoffs. We just got to get in.
Just got to get there. And your boys are playing. Obviously, talk about the Preds, but the junior Preds, you've done a lot of work with the youth hockey and you're seeing that kind of build, and it's been a long road. And now your boys are in St. Louis and you got a big win today and you're in the Nationals. Tell us a little bit about how that's going.
It's been great. It's great for our program, our brand, and just seeing kids come to a stage like this. Like there's lots of people here that between junior and college, and lots of pro guys here, a lot of NHL guys. There's a couple of draft eligible kids here this year at this showcase at the U18. So because they haven't been seen much this year, because they haven't, you know, played a whole lot. So just being at this stage and help develop our 15, 16s, 18s. I have two boys that are 03 and 04. So they're 17 and 16 and both are at Nationals. We had a big win today. We beat the number one ranked team in the nation. Our 16 team did. Our 18s fell today. They didn't win. So back on the saddle and back at it tomorrow. But no, hockey's growing. It's great. And from the Preds and what they do and the rinks that we built between the two Fordyce arenas, like it just, to learn to skate, to learn to play, the just getting kids out on the ice. And they've done a fantastic job doing that. And that's why hockey's been so popular in Nashville in the last, you know, every year it improves.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. It's flown by with you and David here tonight on our season finale of Smashville Live. But Scott, it's good to talk to you, and best of luck with the development roles. And hey, let's see where this thing goes. Huge game Saturday night against Dallas. Going to be a lot of fun.
I agree. Well, thanks for having me, boys. Anytime.
There you go.
And good luck to the boys. Go get them.
Thanks, Gilsy.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Thanks, Gooder.
For Hal Gill, for Scott Nickel, for David Poyle, I am Chase McCabe. And again, thanks for tuning in every week, every Wednesday at 6 o'clock. For Smashville Live, our thanks to New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. That'll do it for us, but we have more hockey talk coming. Slapshot Radio, that is all next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.